Hello and welcome to The Check-In for community, connection, and conversation over the airwaves. I'm Isabella Paxton. Our regular host, Janet Saidi, is out today, so I'm going to be doing my best to fill her shoes this week. On Monday, over 100 MU students stood outside Jesse Hall to protest the alleged plans to fire some or all staff members of the university's social justice centers. Students shared personal stories about how those staff members have helped them get through traumatic experiences on campus and find their sense of community. The university has claimed the allegations are false and that they are restructuring the social justice centers, but much remains unclear. How might this affect our community? How might this affect you? Are you worried about what these spaces would look like after a restructuring? Let us know how you feel about Mizzou's social justice centers, or social justice centers in general. Call us at 573-882-4991.
You're listening to KBIA 91.3 FM. This is a rebroadcast of today's episode of The Check-In. Tune in Thursdays at noon for the live show.
Hello and welcome to The Check-In. I'm Isabella Paxton. Our regular host for the week, Janet Saidi, is currently out of order, or business, I guess you could say. And so I'm going to be filling her shoes this week as we discuss what is happening on the University of Missouri's college campus. So we are going to be talking about all things social justice centers, what services do they offer, who relies on them, and how might they be changing. I have a couple of lovely guests with me. We have our very own Rebecca Smith in the studio, as well as one of our check-in producers, Hannah France. And later in the show, we are going to hear from Professor Devin Fergus, who is a professor at the University of Missouri, who's teaches about Black history. But before we dive into any of that, I just want to ask all of our listeners, are you an MU student? Do you use the social justice centers? Are you maybe an alum who used them during your time on campus? Maybe you haven't used the university's social justice centers, but you have used ones at a different school. You can call us at 573-882-4991. You can also tweet us. Our producers are looking and checking our Twitter, and we will try and answer any questions and comments you have there. Our Twitter is at check-in underscore KBIA. But before we dive into our show and before we discuss what has happened on campus, let's discuss who is being affected. The University of Missouri has five social justice centers. The first of those would be the Gaines Olden Black Culture Center. It was founded in 1972 and was one of the original demands of the Legion of Black Collegians. Their stated mission is to complement the academic programs of study and enrich the quality of campus life for Black students at the University of Missouri. The LGBTQ Resource Center works to create positive communities for its members and answers questions and provide resources to raise awareness about LGBTQ identities, cultures, and issues. The Multicultural Center also works to build a community for everyone, with a focus on students from a variety of marginalized communities. They have a wide range of initiatives supporting Asian American students and Latinx students, among others. The Women's Center was founded in 1975 and hosts programs to stimulate conversations around women's-based issues, as well as provide resources for learning. And the Relationships and Sexual Violence and Prevention Center, better known as the RSVP Center, provides support to those impacted by sexual and relationship violence. They also have initiatives to prevent these forms of violence. So, lots going on, lots big different variety. I am here with Rebecca Smith, who's been reporting on this all week. Hello.
Hi, Isabella. Great to be with you.
Thank you for being here. So, just to kind of get us started, what started this conversation on MU's campus?
Yeah, well, it was a very social justice themed weekend for myself. I'd actually been down in Jefferson City on Saturday covering a trans rights rally organized by the MU abolitionists and Oasis here on campus. And so I was working on that piece on Sunday night when a friend and former peer and colleague here at KBIA, who's graduated and moved on, emailed me or messaged me on Twitter and just said, "Have you seen this? Like, do you know what's happening?" And that's kind of when the floodgates opened, I mean, I think is really the way to describe it. And so what had happened is earlier in that evening on Sunday, April 18th, around 5:30, a former coordinator of the MU Women's Center, Susie Day, had posted that the university was firing its coordinators. And that kind of spiraled into this, I mean, cyclone of fear. I really don't know how else to describe it because there wasn't a lot of good information. It was a lot of hearsay, secondhand information, and no one really had any clear pictures about what was going to happen. So there were hundreds, if not more, tweets, both using justice for MU social justice, MU defends diversity, people talking about their fears if the centers were gone altogether, which was a prevalent fear early on Sunday, if the coordinators were being fired. And so people really just came out of the woodworks talking about, you know, their frustration with this decision, even though we didn't know quite what the decision was, you know, frustration and fear about what does my life look like at MU if these centers are gone, talking about their experiences with those centers, all those sorts of things. And so I was, you know, following up, emailing people, and did get to talk to Christian Basie from MU. He's the spokesperson for MU. And I talked to him Sunday night and still didn't get a lot of details, but got at least it confirmed that the centers themselves are not being eliminated. There is a restructuring happening, is how he put it, where positions will be changing, which was not a lot of information. And so, you know, I was asking, you know, are we going to have additional information from the university on what this restructuring actually means? You know, he kept saying more money and more resources and more staff people to support students, but had no real details on what that was going to look like, you know? And so it was at least the confirmation that the centers were going to remain here, but what did that mean? And, you know, that's when later, again in Sunday, students started talking about organizing on Monday morning at 9 a.m. at Jesse Hall. And we went from there. So Hannah France, the producer who will be with us in a little bit, and another KBIA student, Becca Newton, joined me there. And we followed these students around on Monday morning from Jesse Hall, or from Traditions Plaza to Jesse Hall to the MU Student Center and back, as they really kind of followed the MU student tours for prospective students, is how it was framed. And that Traditions Plaza was chosen so that prospective students and families would have to be confronted by this. And then it according to the students, it came to light that they were just navigating around Traditions Plaza and then navigating around Jesse. So they were just trying to place themselves in the view of these prospective students. So they would be confronted with this part of Masu's legacy, really. I mean, looking back to the protest in 2015 with Concerned Student 1950 and, you know, into now when we still don't have a ton of great information. The Columbia Missourian and the Maneater on campus have both been able to get recordings of different conversations with leaders in diversity. IDE. I can't think of it now. Inclusion, diversity, and equity. There we go. And we know a little bit more details now. We know that as of July 1, current positions within the centers won't exist. So does that mean people are fired? Not exactly. But if a position doesn't exist, how do you have that position? And we don't know entirely, you know, people, are they going to be required to reapply for jobs? And so, you know, it really started, I think, as fear about the centers are going to be gone. And, you know, really started to become a conversation about what it means for a university to remove trusted individuals within a community from those centers. You know, it really became obvious that the coordinators of the centers are really the beating hearts of these organizations. And so there's a lot of fear from students about maybe the center exists, but what if you take away the people we trust?
Yeah. I will just use that as a segue. If anybody listening right now has any sort of resonated with what Becky has said, how do you feel about these people who are going to be leaving the social justice centers? How did you hear about the protest? I know a lot of this spiraled off of Twitter. The protest was organized through that, and we all kind of, I heard about it. I know a lot of our producers heard about it through Twitter, and that's kind of where this whole conversation started. So how are people hearing about this? How are they getting involved? What do they think about the protest? So if you do have any thoughts and or feelings about that, feel free to give us a call, 573-882-4991. We are, again, here to have this conversation with you. So if you have any thoughts, thoughts about it, feel free to let us know or reach out to us on Twitter at check_in_KBIA. To go back to you, Rebecca, I think it's really interesting that all of these protests started because of Twitter, right? Mm-hmm. This wasn't an official statement from the university. And so what could people say for themselves on Monday when they were very concerned about the future of these social justice centers, but they didn't really have anything concrete to go off of?
I don't feel like the protest on Monday was really rooted in any one thing. I mean, yes, obviously the social justice centers, you know, I mean, their cheers, justice for justice and, you know, save our centers and those sorts of things. But it really felt like Monday was a coming together of raw emotion. I mean, people were scared. People were angry and afraid of what it meant for them as a marginalized student or a student who's, you know, been a survivor of sexual or domestic, well, sexual or relationship violence on this campus. And so, you know, while the social justice centers and this lack of transparency from the university was a rallying point, it really seemed to be a gathering of students to say, okay, maybe we don't know what all the answers are about the centers, but there's still a problem. The fact that this wasn't communicated with a student body before decisions were made, the fact that, you know, many students didn't feel like the university had been investing enough into these marginalized populations, into the community here at Mizzou, that a lot of people seem to think, you know, their resources really haven't improved any since 2015 when we mm-hmm. saw Concerned Student 1950. Yeah.
Thank you, Rebecca Smith. You just heard from Rebecca Smith, a fellow reporter here at KBIA. We are going to take a quick break here, and then we are going to come back and we are going to hear from a couple of student voices. So stay tuned, and if you would like to join the conversation, our phone number is 573-882-4991. Thank you, and also, you can reach out to us on our Twitter at check_in_KBIA. We are going to be right back with the check-in after this.
Listening to KBIA 91.3 FM. This is a rebroadcast of today's episode of The Check-In. Tune in Thursdays at noon for the live show, subscribe to The Check-In podcast, or give us a call, leave us a voicemail at 833-560-1329. Again, that's 833-560-1329.
Hello, and welcome back to The Check-In here at KBIA. I am your host, Isabella Paxton, and today we are discussing the University of Missouri's social justice centers amidst rumors that the university will be restructuring the place, the centers, and will be firing all of the staff. We just heard from Rebecca Smith. We were discussing kind of what happened, and there was a protest on Monday and the student voices that were heard there. And we are going to this segment here from a couple of student voices. But before we do that, MU students, alumni, parents, supporters, why are the social justice centers important to you? And to our check-in neighbors who are maybe just living a little further away from the university, not super involved in the current events happening there, did you have any access to social justice centers at your university? Join our conversation at 573-882-4991 or tweet us at check_in_KBIA. We have a caller with us here today, Lauren Brown, who was an alumni with the university. Hi, Lauren, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. And thank you for calling in. So I guess my very first question to you should be, how are you feeling right now with everything going on?
Oh, man, I just feel really, you know, sad, disheartened about what's going on. You know, those coordinators are a staple in the campus community, and I would not have been able to, you know, get through 2015 and the rest of my collegiate years there without the Go BCC and without other centers like the counseling center and things of that nature. So I just think that it's really sad, especially with everything that's going on in the world, particularly at this moment, that something like this would happen.
Yeah, of course. And I know, so you are a KVIA alum just as well. So how has the centers in and of themselves, how have they played a role in you getting your education?
So as far as the Gaines Ullman Black Culture Center, you know, it was such a safe place, a place where Black students could be themselves, where they could learn, where they could interact with each other and not feel, you know, like an outsider. A lot of times on campus, you could feel as if it's a place you don't belong. And, you know, I had a sense of belonging there. It's hard to really learn and get an education when you're under so much stress and you're under so much, you know, discrimination and scrutiny. And I think that just trying to eliminate those folks who worked hard there, you know, put in the time, dedicated themselves to students' lives is just, you know, it's very disheartening. Like I said, it's just very sad. And, you know, it's just something that when I saw it on Twitter, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I can't believe this is happening. Here's Mizzou again, you know, a hashtag that's, you know, not a good look for them right now. So yeah, I'm just really upset about it.
Okay, well, thank you, Lauren, again, for calling in. We really appreciate your time, and thanks for checking in with the check-in. We are going to cut. Our producers, Hannah France and Trevor Hook, spoke with a few members of the community about why they think MU social justice centers are valuable parts of the university and why having resources available for students of a variety of racial ethnic and gender identities are important. We have Hannah France here with us in the studio a little bit to talk about that experience. Hello, Hannah. How are you?
I'm doing well, Isabella.
Thank you for joining us. Can you talk to us a little bit about what your experience was like talking to all these people?
Yeah, absolutely. So yesterday, myself as well as our other producer, Trevor Hook, spoke to a few students, alumni, and other people in the community involved with social justice work about how they are feeling about the proposed restructuring of these social justice centers, particularly related to our caller, Lauren. Trevor spoke to a current freshman. Her name is Kayla Cobb, and I think a lot of what Lauren said, Kayla would agree with. So let's get to a clip from Kayla.
The stuff that you see on Mizzou's websites or in the newsletters and stuff about supporting marginalized students, it really is just for PR, which is, and it's very performative. I would even dare to say that the march that we did for Black Lives Matter towards the beginning of the year was very performative in manner. And they just really wanted the photos and say that, hey, we're doing something kind of, but not follow up on it in practice. And I think that they're giving students what they want, kind of, but not actually involving the students in that process at all. And therefore, students will never be satisfied with what they're giving us because we're never involved in those conversations or in those meetings when they're making decisions like these. We just find out about them.
All right. That was, again, Kayla, an MU freshman, and she was talking about how the support for students at the University of Missouri kind of needs to be upticked. It's been very interesting to hear from where we have a freshman who was not involved in the University of Missouri when we had a little bit of a scandal in 2015. And then we have Lauren Brown, who was incredibly involved in that. And it's been interesting to hear how they have similar themes and how they are saying almost essentially the same narrative. Hannah, what do you think about this caller?
Rebecca might actually remember that she spoke to Kayla Cobb at the protest on Monday. Kayla was there with, you know, about 100 other students voicing their concerns and their feelings about the way that MU currently is running their social justice centers. Rebecca, you spoke to Kayla. What did you think about what she said?
Yeah, I think you really like hit the nail on the head there, Isabella. You know, there really is this cyclical nature that students seem to be really frustrated about. You know, it was 2015, and then it was, you know, just even this year, the Thomas Jefferson statues, right? There's always all of these issues around diversity, inclusion, and making people from different backgrounds, you know, different genders, different sexual orientations feeling comfortable and supported on campus. And, you know, Kayla actually does have somewhat of a connection to 2015 in that she talked about her older brother, who was a student at that time. And she said, I remember so vividly, she said that, you know, the only reason her parents ended up letting her come here was because two girls at the Gaines Oldham Black Culture Center said, "We got you. Like, if you come here, we got you." And she said, you know, the students, we do continue to have each other, but the university has to step up and the university has to be a part of that support. And, you know, her conversation with me was really stuck in my mind. And she ended the conversation saying, you know, the university needs to do better. And if they don't, like, it's going to be 6 years ago all over again. And does anyone really want that?
Yeah, of course. I'm going to take this moment to call out to our listeners. Is anything that we're saying resonating with you guys? How do you feel about these social justice centers? How do you feel about the University of Missouri? Do they need to be doing more? And if they do need to be doing more, what do they need to be doing? We are taking your calls, 573-882-4991, or you can tweet us at @check_KVIA. But while we are waiting eagerly for your calls, Hannah also spoke to another person with the University of Missouri. Hannah, do you want to tell us more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So Trevor actually had this conversation yesterday with another MU freshman. His name is Tayton. He was also at the protest on Monday, as Rebecca might remember. And what Tayton told us about yesterday was that the main worry that students are having right now is that if they lose the current coordinators of the social justice centers, they'll be losing some trusted individuals that to them are irreplaceable. So let's hear from Tayton.
Well, it worries me for not only just myself, but a lot of people I know that look forward to these centers and have built relationships with the people that work there. And the way it's situated now, each resource center is ran by people who have experience within each of those social justice communities. And so for one thing, with the consolidation or restructuring them, you could lose that. And that could make a lot of people more uncomfortable. I personally wouldn't want to go to the LGBT resource center if it was ran by a straight white man. Like, that would make me not feel as comfortable. And it goes that way with all the other centers. But in the end, I think it's just a lot of people feel like, you know, their home space is going to be messed up and they're going to lose some of the people that they love and built relationships with.
Very interesting to hear from Tayton. And he brings up a really good point in that the representatives and the faculty and the staff of these centers should be a part of the communities that they're trying to support. And this is just one of the many questions and the many concerns that students have about this restructuring. And again, I would just like to remind all of our listeners that the university has made no statement about what details the restructuring will do and what exactly that will look like. So these students' concerns are, they have no, essentially, they have no...
I think that's why it's a concern, though, is because it's so nebulous, right? There isn't a clear answer. There's not a clear path forward. And that's what I'm hearing from pretty much everyone I'm talking to, is just uncertainty. I mean, if you belong to a community that's marginalized, especially in the world where we have, you know, continued killing of Black people by police, where we have anti-trans legislation. I mean, even here in Missouri, you know, we recently, just earlier this month, had a Black trans woman killed in Springfield, Missouri. You know, there's still violence happening to people. There's still, you know, difficulties that exist in these students' lives, and just not knowing what those trusted resources that are committed to keeping them safe and giving them a community means and what it's going to look like going forward, I think that's the fear.
Yeah.
And I think it also, has to do with the fact that there's a lot of lost trust. Yeah. I think a lot of students, just especially those belonging to these communities, just don't trust that the university is going to do things that are actually in their best interest.
Yeah. We have a caller, Luke from Columbia, who was a member of the LGBTQ Center. Luke, thank you for joining us on air today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. What's your comment about this situation?
Yeah, as an alumni, I just wanted to voice my concern for the university potentially making cuts to these really essential departments and programs. You know, I've had a lot of friends work in the different centers and use the centers as, you know, essential resources. And I think especially, you know, coming in as someone who was a freshman in 2016 on the heels of everything in 2015 and concerned student 1950 and just ongoing, you know, social justice issues throughout the United States, but also specifically in Missouri. You know, we're seeing attacks on trans students in the state legislature, and as you all just mentioned, against trans people, hate crimes in Springfield. I think that these programs and centers are essential to trans folks and people of color, and to see the university just kind of repeat this pattern of giving lip service to these causes and then cutting the programs, these essential, potentially cutting essential services to students is really, really deeply disturbing.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Luke, for calling and checking in with us. We appreciate your comment and we appreciate your time. That was one of our callers at here in the check-in. If you relate to what he said or if you have a separate opinion, feel free to give us a call at 573-882-4991. We are also checking our tweets, so feel free to send us something there at check-in_KBIA. But before we do that, I would like to bring us back to Hannah France and have her talk to us a little bit about more people that she spoke to.
Absolutely. Thanks, Isabella. So what Luke said just now about the importance of the LGBTQ Center on campus, I think is reflected by a clip that we have from Tracy Davis, who is a coordinator at the Center Project, which is an LGBTQ resource center that services Mid-Missouri. She also helps run the BRIGHT program, which stands for Building Respect and Inclusion Through Training and Education. And I talked to her yesterday a little bit about the importance of having LGBTQ resource centers on campus, as well as having LGBTQ role models for students. Let's hear the clip.
I mean, aside from the obvious, students need a place where they can feel that they can feel comfortable and safe and away from judgment is so important to their own personal health and safety. Beyond that, though, I mean, having queer leaders to look up to having role models so you can kind of see yourself reflected back in those people, it's aspirational, it's inspirational, and it's vital.
That was Tracy from the Center Project. And one of the points that she brought up was a concern that we heard from a listener earlier in saying that there are concerns that the staff are no longer going to be parts of the communities that they are supporting. Tracy, with her work in the Center Project, works to change that. And I think that it's going to be a very interesting point to see where that goes forward from here.
Absolutely, Isabella. And, you know, something that we've been talking about with all of the recent, you know, proposed legislation that affects trans youth and, you know, with the continued violence against LGBTQ individuals, you know, both in Missouri and all over the country, it is really important that these students have resources on campus. I actually spoke to Tracy and another person who works at the Center Project. His name is Jordan, recently, about the importance of resources for trans individuals, specifically as they struggle to find access to healthcare, both for, you know, trans-related health issues, but also just general health checkups. So it's definitely important, I think, like Tracy said and like Luke said, that LGBTQ people, you know, have these resources. And I can see why when there's talks of restructuring and maybe firing people that these students trust, I can see why that could be upsetting and scary for people.
You know, Hannah, interestingly enough, if people tune back into KBIA later this afternoon or tomorrow morning, they will actually hear that piece on Missouri Health Talks with Tracy and Jordan about the importance of these resources. And I just really want to double down on something that Hannah mentioned as well, which is the importance of having these resources on campus, because there are lots of great resources that do exist in our community, but without them being on campus, you have transportation barriers. You also lack then people who understand the intersectionality of being a college student and those challenges with all those additional layers of identity and gender and sexual orientation.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It also brings me to, according to a paper published in the Journal of Homosexuality in 2018, there was a study that was released that showed that a lot of LGBTQ students are still experiencing anti-LGBTQ harassment and violence, and that the Social Justice Center gives them a space to protect themselves from that and also fight against those forms of violence. We are going to be in our next segment talking to Professor Devin Fergus from the Black History Center at the University of Missouri. If you have any questions for him or any comments about these social justice centers, feel free to give us a call at 573-882-4991.
You're listening to The Check-In on KBIA 91.3 FM. This is a rebroadcast of today's episode. Tune in Thursdays at noon for the live show.
Welcome back to The Check-In. I am your host, Isabella Paxton, and today we are discussing all things social justice centers. When did you first learn about social justice centers? Did Mizzou's social justice centers influence your decision to attend this school? Join our conversation and let us know. Call us at 573-882-4991 or tweet us at checkin_KBIA. We are joined today with Professor Devin Fergus, the Strickland Distinguished Professor of History and Black Studies at the University of Missouri. Dr. Fergus, how are you today?
Hi, Isabella. Thanks so much for having me today. I'm doing well.
Of course. Thank you for joining us. So we have been talking a lot about what is currently happening now, but I wanted to discuss with you a little bit about the history of social justice centers. When did they first start popping up in colleges and why?
Sure. I'm going to say that there's a sort of a longer history of social justice in general. And I think the rise of the centers comes out of that longer history. And that history really sort of dates back to the 1960s with the rise of social justice movements on campus. The presence and integration of Black students on college campuses across the country, frankly, is this critical sort of moment in which as schools begin to desegregate, the needs of these college students change. And whether institutions are going to be responsive to those needs or not becomes the question. And so the mid-60s, late-60s, you get Black students coming on campus. And then you also get students asking for campuses to reflect their interests and reflect their concerns and needs, whether that includes the increase of Black history courses, for instance, the presence of Black faculty, or even the presence of Black barbers on campus. Which becomes an issue on many college campuses across the country. How do campuses reflect the social and communal needs of the population on campus that it actually serves? And so this is the sort of the longer sort of arc in history. And out of that history comes the rise of Black Studies programs and also the rise of Latinx programs, rise of Asian American Studies, the rise of women and gender studies. It comes out of that sort of history of campuses that begin to accept students who are different than a generation before, at least acknowledge at some level, and then how do these campuses and these institutions reflect the changing needs of these students? And so I think the questions that you actually posed initially about when did you first learn of social justice centers, and more importantly, in many ways, does it inform your choice or decision to come to Mizzou? And I'm going to sort of say this too, historically. Some of my research in my earlier projects looks at what happens at university campuses across the country, but especially in the South, when people were thinking about whether to relocate to a college town. And one of the questions they ask themselves, it's not simply students, but also experts in their respective fields, whether they're engineers, social scientists, or in the biomedical field, they ask themselves, I mean, what are those spaces like? What are those environments like? And is it an environment in which I want to raise a family or relocate myself to? And they become critical issues. And I'm thinking here specifically about the rise of Research Triangle Park. In North Carolina in the 1950s, in the RTP era in the 1950s, social scientists are thinking about relocating to that area, and they're asking these explicit questions about not simply about paycheck and income and those kind of questions, but the kinds of social environments that I'm going to be living in if I relocate myself. And so these are questions that we ask ourselves as faculty members, as students ask themselves, and that broader experts in the field, people, professionals, ask themselves about a particular environment and space.
Right. Thank you, Dr. Fergus. We are going to go to another caller that we have. Lynn, thank you for joining us. What is your comment?
So in terms of the social justice centers and how important they are to any campus and creating spaces that people would like to move to in terms of undergraduates or graduate students coming to campus, or even faculty and staff who are taking positions here, you know, it's very important that the kinds of spaces that these centers create, and especially the long histories that the professional staff provide for all of these communities, are so important, not just in terms of success on campus for students and staff, but then also moving on in terms of professional networks and career opportunities. Since most people's first jobs are coming from their friend networks, from their family networks, and the colleagues that they create on campus can be the ones that are facilitated through the social justice centers.
Right. Thank you, Lynn, for calling in on the check-in. I am going to reach out to our listeners for a quick second. Are anything that Dr. Fergus or Lynn saying, does that resonate with you? Have you used the social justice centers? Have they helped you find a job? What sort of initiatives that all of these centers participate in, have they affected you? Let us know. Call us at 573-882-4991. And again, we have our Twitter that is live and waiting for you to comment. It is @checkin_KBIA. Again, that's _KBIA. But before we go to that, I just wanted to ask Devin Fergus really quickly, has the intent of these social justice centers change? We've discussed a lot about what they were originally designed to do, and has that morphed? Has it morphed for the better in any way?
I mean, I'd say yes. Some levels they have evolved and changed. And as I tell my students, that institutions emerge because of a perceived social problem or issue. And if that's the case, you also expect institutions to change and evolve, as well as bureaucracies to change and evolve in response to changing social problems and issues. And so in the 19 sort of in the 60s, for instance, a major concern of student justice movements were things like colonialism, anti-colonialism movements, right? In the 1980s, what emerges in many ways on college campuses is a push for divestment in South Africa, or even the late 70s in Southern African governments in places like Zimbabwe, or in the 1980s in South Africa, this move for divestiture of companies and corporations. And so certainly these social justice movements on campus and institutions that instantiate these movements, you expect them to evolve and change as the events and moments and issues of a particular time period changes. That kind of organic growth is something which is healthy for institutions, for societies, and obviously for individuals.
Yeah, of course. And
I'll say this one last thing. The famous quote from Malcolm X, and I'll probably butcher it, but I'll paraphrase it here, who a reporter once asked him just before he was assassinated. It seemed like his views had changed over the last few years. And his retort was, if I believe the same things I did today that I did 4 or 5 years ago, I've witnessed the last 4 or 5 years of my life. I've not learned anything. And so institutions and individuals evolve and change over time as part of a sort of dialectic of society.
Yeah, of course. That makes a lot of sense. According to the American Psychiatric Association, mental illness rates in African-American communities, although they are similar to the general population, studies have proven that there are less resources for African-American communities in terms to mental health. And my question for you would be, have we seen social justice centers, has that been one of the ways that they've adapted? Have we grouped the conversation of mental health into the rest of all of these discussions?
I just sort of say that a general emphasis of social justice centers has been how to grapple with issues of poverty and inequality, and issues particularly like the wealth gap. And in many ways, this is one of the origins of social justice, of this idea of social justice, not simply in the U.S., but also in Latin America, frankly. And it comes with a sort of a moral critique often of society, not simply one grounded in political economy, but also a moral vision and moral critique as well. The psychiatric aspect of it, some centers and institutes might embrace that or engage that more than others. Coming out of the 60s, a certain part of the conversation, a part of the dialogue coming out of the 1960s and 70s of social justice movements, though it was much more sort of, I'd say these movements in the 60s and 70s were much more sort of public facing than trying to interrogate the psyches or damaged psyches of people of color.
Professor Fergus, thank you so much for joining us. Again, we appreciate your time. If you are listening now and you've related to anything that Professor Fergus has said, how have the social justice centers impacted you? Have they spoken to your mental health? Have their initiatives helped you adapt to college settings or beyond? Let us know. Give us a call at 573-882-4991 or tweet us at check_KBIA. Thank you again, Devin Fergus, Professor Fergus, for your time. We appreciate all of your expertise and learning more about the history of social justice centers. We are going to head back to Hannah France here. We want to hear a little bit more about our student voices. And so we've discussed a lot about the centers in and of themselves and how they are impacting the students, but what voice haven't we heard yet?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Isabella. So I think in relation to what Dr. Fergus was talking about, supporting students and how social justice centers evolve, a great social justice center on MU's campus is the Women's Center, which was, you know, established in the 70s. And a student that I talked to yesterday, her name is Katie Whitlid. She's currently a senior, but she's been supported by the MU Women's Center since the time she was a freshman, and she's now actually the president of MU Women in STEM, and she talked a lot about how the Women's Center supports women who are in male-dominated fields of study.
There have been studies done that women in college, they perform better when they have female peers around them and female mentors. So since STEM is such a male-dominated field, that can be difficult to get. And so one role that the coordinators especially play is mentorship. Even if they are not directly STEM-related, I know the director of the Women's Center, she's very active and involved with mentoring students and engaging with them, which is just a great resource for people who otherwise in STEM fields may not get that same mentorship within their major.
That was Katie, a student at the University of Missouri, and she brings in a really good point, which is that for women to feel supported, they tend to thrive with other women around. I, as a woman, can confirm this. I also am a little bit of a big fan of the Women's Center. I've been using and participating in their activities and initiatives for my entire college career. I think I used to take more naps in the Women's Center than anybody else because they have couches and blankets and it's very quiet and it's very nice. So I'm a big fan of the Women's Center. But it's also really important to acknowledge that those resources are still necessary for people who, you know, normally aren't going to be surrounded by people similar to them. Hannah, I wanted to ask you, how, as a journalism major, how do you think that STEM and women and all of this fun stuff, do you think it's as important as Katie says?
Absolutely. You know, I actually had a roommate who was a woman in STEM. She was an engineering major. And I know that she felt that, you know, she was really the only woman in a lot of her classes. And, you know, that can be, you know, overwhelming and intimidating. So, you know, to know that we have these resources on campus for students, you know, who are the minority in their class and who need that extra support because, you know, they're not seeing themselves represented as much as, you know, male students in an engineering class probably do. I think it probably helps a lot, you know, like Katie said, to make sure that they are succeeding. Another great organization on campus for minority students is the Multicultural Center, or the MCC as it's often called. It supports a lot of different umbrella organizations like the Asian American Association, which is an organization that our friend Andrew Pham is a part of. And I spoke to him yesterday about why that has been important for him during his time as a student.
I would say one of the most important things I have to take away from AAA is the understanding of my own Asian identity. All right, big surprise, right? But I really think that's probably one of the biggest values from it, is realizing not only like more about my own identity and how it'll play into the future, how it plays into the like the present of now, especially like the most recent things of like the Atlanta shooting, and then just really about what a community can really do for someone.
All right. That was Andrew Pham, and he's talking about the Multicultural Center, which is just one of the many, many social justice centers that we have here on campus. And he brings up a really interesting point that the Multicultural Center is not just for one group of people, but for everybody. So if you feel like you don't fit into one of the boxes or one of the communities that the social justice centers offer, the Multicultural Center is the end all be all for you. And they're very welcoming and accepting of everyone. And that being said, I think one of our last social justice centers that we haven't touched on quite as much would be the RSVP Center. And Hannah, you spoke to someone who's involved with that center, correct?
Yes, actually, his name is Matthew Huffman, and he's not directly involved with the RSVP Center, but rather he is the Director of Public Affairs for the Missouri Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence, of which the RSVP Center is a partner of. And he spoke to me yesterday about the importance of having centers like this on campus for students.
I think that it's incredibly important that programs like the RSVP Center exist on campus because in so many ways, it shows students who have been impacted by sexual harassment, sexual assault, dating violence, that the institution is investing in their care, their safety, and their recovery. And so centers like the RSVP Center provide a space for safety and healing and connection, as well as really shaping the norms on campus around how we prevent sexual harassment and assault from ever occurring.
All right, that was our last student voice for the evening. I wanted to thank you all again for joining us here on The Check-In today. The Check-In is produced by Alicia Haywood with Trevor Hook and Janet Saidi, who unfortunately was not able to join us today. We have our producers, Becca Newton, Hannah France, Fernando Naro, and me, Isabella Paxton. Our KBIA News Director, Ryan Famuliner, Engineer Mark Johnson, and Director Kyle Felling. Special thanks to all of them for making this show happen today. If you missed any part of the conversation, catch the rebroadcast this evening and subscribe to the Check-In podcast.